If you don't mind, I'm going to get right into the Bible, and I'm going to speak about what God has said to me and hopefully encourage you all in the ways that God would have us to go. Let's begin. I've asked the Lord along with you all to be with me as you have asked the Lord to be with you, so I'm going to believe that He is with us and that we are blessed. So as was mentioned, you saw it on my screen, a little bit of my notes there, but I'm not a political activist, nor am I an enthusiast, but I am a Bible prophecy student. I've been a Christian since 1996. I used to be into heavy metal as a drummer. I had very long hair and I had a very bad attitude. I was drinking and doing all sorts of drugs, but when I started reading the Bible at 19 years old, I was radically transformed. It was such a blessing to be able to come out of the darkness into the marvelous light that God has given us so that He will be able to encourage not only me, but my family, which later came. And then of course, those that are willing to listen and hear what it is that the Spirit is saying to the churches. So I'm thankful that God has called me into this opportunity of being a minister of His. I have been a pastor from the year 2000 till 2016. I carried credentials for many of those years, but now I work with, as was mentioned, Revelation with Daniel. That's about all I'm going to say in regard to me. But as a result of being interested in Bible prophecy, I've taken a note a time or two in regard to the Bible and the history of how we have seen those things that God has led His people through, knowing that history repeats itself. And I want to be able today and this morning for you all, it's actually in the evening for me, but I want to be able to look at some of what the Bible says about a message to the next United States president. That's the title today, to the next United States president. And after all, the nations are prepping. It seems we can see that in the last 4 months, right? Since we heard about COVID-19 and all of the shutdowns and the potential this or that and all the confusion that's going on with some news saying that and Dr. Fauci one day saying this and then a video coming out saying something completely different and Trump not totally understanding what's happening and all the medical doctors that have coming together with what's called the Frontline Doctors of America and how they're saying that hydrochloroquine is good, whereas others are saying, no, it's not good at all, it's dangerous, and Facebook is taking you down because you're trying to say what is good for the health, whether it be natural remedies, vitamin C, hydrochloroquine, and various things like this. We're seeing the world completely turning on its head. How many times recently have you been on YouTube and you've seen that big black screen that says, sorry, this video is no longer available? And you're wondering, what's going on? It's like they're putting a muzzle on us, trying to shut us down and help us not to share with one another. And so even some of the words that I've spoken in this video perhaps might be listened to by the various social media giants, and they will potentially shut us down. So we've got to keep sharing. We've got to keep understanding what it is the Bible is saying. And pretty soon we're not going to have a voice like we do today with YouTube and Facebook and Twitter and all the various social medias, whether it be Brighteon or MeWe or in some cases TikTok and Instagram and all these other avenues that we have. But today we can do this. We can enjoy each other's company, and I'm praising God for that. So we're going to be looking at the concepts behind Revelation chapter 13, verses 11 through 18. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to share my screen with you all, and we're going to see here that Potiphar, he didn't believe his wife over Joseph, else Joseph would not or would have been slain, right? And so what we're going to see is this idea of Joseph being able to go through an experience as God's, what we're going to call him as a remnant person, a remnant faithful person. But think about this story for a minute. You have Potiphar, okay? He was the captain of the king's guard, the captain of the guard. He was like the military man of Egypt, okay? And so he was representing a civil authority, a very powerful civil authority with all the Egyptian army behind him. At his command, he could kill anyone. He could destroy anybody. He could go and send armies this way or that way just at his command, okay? So he is the civil scenario in that story. You have Joseph, as was mentioned, as one of the faithful, okay? He's one of the faithful, and so you have the civil authority and God's faithful remnant. But in the midst of these two people, or let me say groups, I know it's just Potiphar and it's Joseph, but they represent big groups. In between those, there's a woman. And guess what that woman wants to do? That woman wants to commit fornication. Did you understand what I was just saying? That woman wants to commit fornication. So the woman was supposed to be with this guy, but the woman wants to be with this guy. And this guy, the faithful remnant, wouldn't submit to the dictates of the desires of this woman who wanted to commit fornication. And so she got upset. She started telling false rumors and lies and defaming and demonizing this man, the faithful remnant, Joseph. And as a result of her crying out against what was going on with that person and her rage against him not surrendering to her will, she voices the concerns over to this guy. And guess what he does? He imprisons that person, the faithful. Now, he doesn't fully believe that what she said against him is true. And you can see that because he doesn't off with his head. There's no death decree for this guy. And why? Because probably Potiphar didn't fully believe what his wife was saying because he knew this guy. He could trust this guy. In fact, he liked this guy. But she didn't because he did not surrender to her will. So the civil authority, God's faithful remnant, and the harlot that wants to commit fornication in between the two, trying to cause a problem with God's faithful people on the earth, right? So that's what you have in this situation there with what we see in regard to this story of God's faithful people. Now, so Potiphar didn't really believe that Joseph was doing what his wife said he was doing. You can find that, by the way, in Genesis 39. You can read the story for yourself. Now, this idea of a harlot woman is actually found in the Bible. I'm going to turn there real quick to Revelation 17, verses 3 through 4, and I'll share my screen with you if you'd like to see. It's Revelation 17, 3 through 4. So, John is writing, and he's talking about an angel. An angel carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness. By the way, this phrase, in the spirit, only occurs four times in the book of Revelation. This is the third time. You got to check it out. I saw a woman, okay? This woman, who was she? She sat upon a scarlet-colored beast, which is a kingdom, full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and 10 horns. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet, and it was a purple and scarlet color. She was decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand. And it says it was full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. So this woman wanted to commit fornication. Obviously, that's what her cup was filled with that she was drinking. And upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery Babylon the Great. So this woman is Mystery Babylon the Great. So what we have in this story is Joseph being persecuted by the woman who wants to commit fornication, okay? So let's continue on to this idea and find that in the book of Esther, you have Ahasuerus, you also have Mordecai and Esther, a kind of a team pair there, and you have Haman, okay? You can read about this in Esther chapter 3 if you're interested. And so Esther chapter 3 is dealing with this story of how Esther and Mordecai, faithful together, the faithful remnant, are actually working close with and part of the civil system that Ahasuerus is leading. He's much more civil than he is religious, just as Potiphar was, right? But we have the faithful remnant illustrated in Mordecai and Ruth. No, not Ruth, but Esther. Sorry, I'm trying to get my head straight. So what we have here is Mordecai and Esther representing the faithful, and then Ahasuerus representing the civil authority. Now, that civil authority, just like anybody else, could, like, do what he wanted. I mean, remember, he threw a party for, like, half a year? I mean, seriously. So he throws this party for half a year, and in the midst of all this, there's this guy named Haman. Now, who would he be? Well, he's kind of like the apostate Protestants. In fact, he's kind of like that harlot woman that wants worship. And not only does this harlot woman want worship, as you can see in Revelation 12 and 13 with the, what I call the fraud head, the personator of the Father, the personator of the Son, and the personator of the Holy Spirit. Now, it's not three in one, it's not one in three, neither is it three gods, tritheist, okay? We have the Father, we have a Son, and we have the Spirit of them both. And that's what's happening in Revelation 12 and the first beast of 13 and the second beast of 13. This is the image to the beast, and who is the beast? It's Christ there, personified by the papal system there in Revelation 13, the first beast. So we have Rome, we have the papacy, and we have the apostate Protestants. And the Roman power and the papal power with their spirit is in the apostate Protestants. And that's what we're having here is the Father, the Son, and the Spirit of the Father and the Son, illustrated by the dragon, the beast, and the false prophet. That's what I call the fraud head. That was a very big picture, very summed up quickly. But here's the idea. Haman in this story would represent the apostate Protestants, okay? Kind of with the desire to be worshipped, the desire to not really worship, but to be worshipped necessarily, and also to cause all the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed, okay? That's the idea. That's what you're seeing in Revelation 13 in this story of Haman. And so you have the civil authority, you have the one that wants worship and the one that wants to command all to worship, and you have the faithful, Mordecai and Esther. What we're seeing here is the same thing we just saw in the story of Potiphar and his wife, which doesn't have a name, who wants to commit fornication with the faithful remnant of God. But the faithful remnant won't do that. In fact, they were saying, no, I am not going to commit fornication with this harlot woman that wants to commit fornication, that's supposed to be connected with the kings of the earth, but is not, but wants to commit fornication, right? So no. And so you have Esther and Mordecai, faithful, praying, fasting, seeking for God's people, and trying to protect them. They're all scattered over the world. I mean, the Jews are like not really like where they're supposed to be. Kind of like what we see today, right? God's people are scattered around the world, and they're not really part of the system like the Jews necessarily. They're part kind of like a branch of their own, and they're faithful. They're kind of meeting together in homes and groups and barns and various things like that. Okay, probably not Haman and Esther. Probably Esther's not worshiping in those kind of situations, but Mordecai may have been before he was hired, as you can read in the story. Anyways, in that story, there's a death decree, and what's the result of the death decree? Well, God's people are delivered. But what did the death decree come for? It was because Haman, the apostate Protestant, wanted worship for himself and wanted to cause all to receive worship, rather to render worship to a false god, of course, because he was not like Esther and Mordecai. He was worshiping a false god. And so the civil power was Ahasuerus, the apostate persecuting religious power was Haman, and God's faithful remnant was Mordecai and Esther. Now, you can also see in the story of Nebuchadnezzar, Daniel chapter 3. So I've referred to Genesis, I've referred to Esther, and now we're referring to Daniel. You see, in this story, you have this idea of Daniel being the faithful. No, sorry, we're going to be talking about Daniel being the faithful one later. We're in chapter 3. That's the three faithful Hebrews. Now, these three Hebrews actually worship the one true God of the Bible, and they believe that the Father has a Son. The Father is the one true God, and the Father has a Son. And you can see that illustrated in the fact that Nebuchadnezzar, when he saw what was going on in the fiery furnace, by the way, heated seven times hotter. Seven is a great word that you can use in the book of Revelation and understand the concepts of seven and the fullness of it, like the final, fullest, persecuting, purifying heat that comes from the enemy is going to be there in Daniel chapter 3, which, by the way, if you read Daniel chapter 3 and Revelation 13 verses 11 through 18, you have connections that I don't think you'll find in any other chapters of the Bible, okay, like especially referring to Revelation 13. We have a great connection, and there are so many ways you can apply Revelation 13 to Daniel chapter 3. They both have 666. They both have an image. They both have fire. They both have faithful. They both have unfaithful. They both have civil authorities. They both have persecution. They both have the Son of God. And you can find that one. Just go ahead and keep looking in Revelation chapter 13. You'll find him. And so you have all these illustrations there in Daniel chapter 3 with Revelation 13. So the three faithful Hebrews, they're the ones that are doing all they can to represent the one true God that has a son. And they, because they believe in the Father and His Son, and they have the mind of Christ, are actually partaking of the Spirit of Christ, which the Father sent, as you can read in Galatians chapter 4. In fact, I'm going to show you that real quick. I'm going to go to this one and share my screen, and we're going to go to Galatians chapter 4, verse 6. Because you are sons, God has sent forth the Spirit of His Son into your hearts, crying, Abba, Father. Now, if you haven't noticed in this section, right here in verse 4, in the fullness of time, God sent forth His Son. We know that that's Jesus. There's no way around that. God sent forth His Son. He actually had a son to send, and that's the point here. God sent forth His Son. Two verses later, in verse 6, God hath sent forth, what does it say? The Spirit of His Son. Now, we know that that's Jesus, right? And so the Spirit of His Son would be the Spirit of Jesus. And that's John chapter 14 is all about. It's about Christ explaining in the third person that the Father will be sending the Spirit of truth. Who is the truth? It is Jesus who is the truth. And so that's why he said in verse 18, I will come to you, right? And so in this story of Daniel chapter 3, these three faithful Hebrews believed in the Father, and the Father having a son, you can see that by their witness to Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar was like, wow, I see four in the fire, but there's supposed to only be three. The fourth looks like unto who? The Son of God. How did he know that God had a son? Well, it was because Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, all four of them, were able to minister and witness and share the truth that they understood about the Father having a son. And as a result of their commitment to the Father, they had the mind of Christ, they had the Spirit of Christ, they had the Spirit of God, and they were one, unified. They were in the same purpose, mind and spirit and character with the Father and the Son. That's why Nebuchadnezzar was able to say, yes, I know that one, the fourth. He's like the Son of God. And so Nebuchadnezzar in this story represents the civil authority, in fact, the persecuting civil authority. And Nebuchadnezzar, you can read in the first few verses, he gathers together with the seven different groups, interestingly, seven different groups, the sheriffs, the satraps, the governors, the princes, the counselors, the, you know, all those other ones, right? So I can't remember all seven. But he gathers with them, and who would that be? Well, that's like all the other nations, which kind of like in Revelation 13, verses 11 through 18, that image of the beast, America, they have their civil authorities, their governance, their, you know, political parties all over the world, right? So what Nebuchadnezzar does is he gathers all them together to the same place, which, by the way, is like the St. Peter's Circle. I know it's called the St. Peter's Square, but if you look at some of the sermons I've presented at the Revelation with Daniel YouTube page, you'll find that it's more like the St. Peter's Circle. Okay, like look at St. Peter's Square and see if you can find a square. You see more of a circle. Why? Because right there in Daniel chapter 3, you have the plains of Dura. Dura means circle. And so this circle that's actually probably most likely, if you just use logic in your head, it's around this obelisk that's about 90 feet tall, right? So if you go over to St. Peter's Circle, you'll find that there's a circle there with an obelisk in the middle, and it's about 90 feet tall. It's in fact like 83 or 84, I think it is. But, you know, you kind of realize that it's about the same dimension, similar, give or take, you know, depending on the height of the king and the distance between his hand and his, I think it's right here. I don't remember exactly where it is, but you can see that the distance is pretty close between the circle of Dura and the circle of St. Peter's Square with the obelisk there in the middle. Anyways, there are so many connections there. You can find that the three faithful Hebrews are there, and they're representing those that will go through the trials, the seven times hotter trials at the end of time, because God is purifying them. In fact, he's burning the worldliness from them. You can find that word in the great controversy, worldliness, okay? Or earthliness, I think it is. I think it's earthliness, yeah. I'd have to see that one again. I'd have to search it. Anyways, do your homework. One of those are there. And so this scenario with Nebuchadnezzar and all those that are gathered together representing the second beast of Revelation 13, and of course the faithful remnant there, is the same kind of scenario that you see in Revelation 13. Now, why am I bringing this up? Why is it important that I'm sharing this with who I'm calling the next president of the United States. Well, guess what? There's some voting going on right now, and it could, according to Trump, potentially be withheld because of the United States Postal Service and all the craziness going on with COVID and how things are not delivered on time and how there's so many potentials for the mail-in ballots to be swayed or changed or adjusted. And, you know, I mean, it's crazy. People are going into the ballots today and they're like, nope, sorry, you can't vote as a Republican because that's all broken. You have to vote as a Democrat. And they're like, I'm not a Democrat. They're like, well, today you are because you're not registered as a Republican. And they go and they find out that like who their registration says they are, who they represent. And sure enough, they represent Democrat. And so it doesn't seem fair. There's a lot of crazy things going on in America right now. Why? Because the devil knows he has but a short time. And if we can't be in prayer over what's going on and studying to find how we can be faithful today, like those three faithful Hebrews, we're going to miss out. I don't think we have a lot of time. I think what we've seen is like Revelation 13 describes, like Joseph went through, like Esther and Mordecai went through, and like also what the three faithful Hebrews went through. We have a civil authority that represents America, friends. And that civil authority is connected with a harlot or somebody who wants worship or somebody who is gathering together as a political party. And that's all represented by those apostate Protestants in America. And those two powers are going to work together to persecute God's people. So to the next president of the United States, you don't want to be part of this. You need to understand Bible prophecy. And the best book that I could suggest you read right now and understand and surrender to is the Bible, followed next to a book called The Great Controversy, written by Ellen White. The Great Controversy. If you don't know where it is, if you don't know how to find it, I will personally buy you one and send it to you. So feel free to contact me. I'd love it. Revelationwithdaniel.com. Anyways, in these studies here, you have Nebuchadnezzar, you have Ahasuerus, you have Potiphar representing persecuting powers, you have Haman, you have the wife of Potiphar, and you have the group that gathered together for Nebuchadnezzar representing those who want to persecute God's people. Now, in the next story we're going to talk about is Daniel chapter 6. You want to read that one because I think in my study, Daniel chapter 6 illustrates the third angel's message more powerfully than any other chapter in the Bible. How do I say that? Okay, think about it for a second. You have Daniel representing the faithful, okay? You have this guy, Darius, who he's representing the civil authority, but at the same time, he's working with others that kind of represent the civil authority as well, except those that he's working with, 122 unfaithful people, unfaithful to God, that is, and also unfaithful to their president or their king, right? So they're unfaithful. This 122, kind of like the religious right, if you will, they look good, they sound good, but they're not good. Okay, so the president of the next president of the United States, listen to me, they're not good. They're the ones that are going to cause all the trouble. And just like Potiphar didn't really think that Joseph was the wrong guy, but he was kind of tricked into persecuting him, just like Ahasuerus really didn't want to kill the Jews, but because of Haman and his trickery, he ended up doing it without realizing what was going on. And just like Nebuchadnezzar giving those faithful Hebrews a second chance, like, hey guys, listen, if you don't worship, like I said before, if you don't worship when the music comes on, you're going to be killed. I mean, there's the fiery furnace. It's going to happen to you. Let me give you another chance, right? Nobody would do that. No king would do that to some three unfaithful in this scenario. Hebrews from another land? No way. So the king really liked them. That's the scenario. And so in Daniel chapter 6, King Darius really likes Daniel as well. In fact, when this 120, they came together trying to write laws void of religious liberty, and they also wrote religious laws. So they were trying to bring church and state together. Come on now. It's going to happen, but it shouldn't. It doesn't need to. And the next president doesn't have to make it happen. We need more time to be able to spread the gospel to save as many souls as possible so as to, as the Bible says, bring as many sons as we can possible by God's grace to glory. And so that's the goal, is to extend that time just a little bit longer so we have more opportunity to work, more opportunity to spread the truth as it is in the Son of God. And so this Darius king, he's persecuting Daniel, who's representing the faithful remnant, but he doesn't mean to. You can read the story for yourself. These people, the 122 false or misrepresentatives, what they're doing is they're putting together laws void of religious liberty, religious laws they are. It's a whole world movement. Everybody, they want everybody to worship. Who do they want them to worship? They want everybody to worship the one at the head. Now, in this case, it would be the president of the United States, connected with somebody who is also the religious ruler of the world, which would, of course, be the one with the deadly wound that was healed. That's the image that they're making too, right? The image of the beast who received power from the one whose deadly wound was healed, causing all the world to worship the beast that was before him. We know who that is. That's the papacy. America is going to work with the apostate Protestants of this nation to cause all to worship the first beast before him. That's what's happening. And Darius didn't understand what was happening. Darius didn't know that the whole unfaithful 122 were trying to cause Daniel to worship in the same way that they were. And it was just a quick thing. The last movements will be rapid ones. In fact, in Daniel chapter 6, it says it was only 30 days. Why 30 days? Because the last movements will be rapid ones. Look back 4 months. Has that been rapid? I mean, I guess we're going on into 5 months now, but like that was extraordinarily rapid. Okay, so we're now in this COVID crisis. Everybody's calling it the plandemic, and that's definitely a better word. Yes, people have died, but not as many as they said would. And also, I mean, like I know a lot of people, I'm interacting with a lot of people, and I've asked so many people, how many do you know that have actually died from the coronavirus? And people will say, well, the news says, no, not the news. How many people do you know that have died from the coronavirus? And they're like, none. I'm like, exactly. I know one person that I actually personally knew. And he was in his 70s. He was at the end of his life. He was already trying to find ways to heal. And so when he caught the virus, it took him not too far afterwards, okay? So it's like the news is trying to say this, but it's not in all reality saying what it should, because that's what was happening with this 120 that were in Daniel chapter 6. They were giving fake news. And the president, Darius, he bought it. He totally bought it. So what happens is anybody who doesn't worship according to the dictates of your conscience, O king, who's the one man at the head, who later signs the writing, bringing church and state together, he's the one that needed to be worshiped, or there would be persecution unto death. And as a result of this persecution unto death, Daniel goes into the lion's den. But God was faithful in delivering him so that there would be no persecution of his people representing the 144,000, which Daniel does. Okay, so in their case, the swords broke like straw. Okay, they were powerless. And so God used his angels to bless Daniel. You can read it in how Darius actually mentioned the word that God has sent his angel to shut the lion's mouths, right? So God is faithful. And in fact, if you read the writings of Sister White, you'll find that Jesus sent an angel. And though it says also Jesus was there personally, and yes, through the Spirit, he is there personally. And it was through that angel that the Spirit was come and able to protect Daniel. So this whole scenario with you have Potiphar, you have Ahasuerus, you have Nebuchadnezzar, you have Darius, those are all the civil authorities, the civil leaders that are doing everything they can to destroy God's people. But they're doing it ignorantly. It's because of the woman. It's because of Haman. It's because of the group that gathers together, all the sheriffs and the counselors, the captains, the all the others that are mentioned, the judges and the governors. And then, of course, in Daniel chapter 6, it's because of those unfaithful 122. And so Daniel, by the way, just to finish up the third angel's message thing, he was a student of the Bible. He was commandment keeper, and he was also one that was dedicated to prayer. As a result of that, he was found as though he were innocent. Now, innocence was found in him. Innocence before who? Before the most holy being in the universe. That is God the Father with his Son. Okay, so the Father is the most holy because the Son displayed the righteousness of his Father, and we can be made right the righteousness of God in his Son. You can see that in 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 21. And so what we're seeing here is Daniel was found faithful. He was found righteous because he studied the Bible, he prayed, he witnessed, and he was a believer. And so as a result of these three things, what we find in the sanctuary, in the holy place, you find the table of showbread, the altar of incense, and the candlestick. That's what he was doing. So he was basically implementing in his life the sanctuary experience of the holy place. And as a result, he was found innocent. Why? because he believed in his God. It was justification by faith in verity in the story of Daniel chapter 3. Deliverance of his people, the, you know, the whole thing. So that story, Daniel chapter 6, did I say Daniel 3? I meant Daniel 6. Daniel chapter 6 is a life, a real life illustration of the third angel's message, and it's powerful. I love that story. So what we have is all these scenarios illustrating the same thing. Now, let's find another scenario where we see this America, apostate Protestantism, and the papal system all joining together to try to destroy God's people. We're seeing that illustrated in all these scenarios so far. Now, Herod, it was not Herodias and her daughter, but it was Herod. He revered and respected John. You can find this story in Mark chapter 6, okay? So he actually listened to John and he liked him. Herod did. He was the civil authority, right? And so he represented those that were going to be rulers in the land. But there was an apostate persecuting religious power, which was Herodias, who, by the way, she was a harlot because she was sleeping with Philip. She shouldn't have been sleeping with Philip. And the faithful remnant called her out saying, and him, Herod, you can't be with this woman. She's married to him, right? So that was fornication with the kings of the earth going on right there, just like in Revelation 17 that we read earlier. And so this whole story is illustrating just the same as the other ones were, that this king who we're going to say is the next president of the United States, he doesn't really understand what's happening. In fact, this guy was drunk with the wine of Rome. And in his besotten state, he wasn't really able to think clearly. Neither was his cabinet. His cabinet was drunk with the wine of Rome, just as he was. And so when he was asked by Herod's woman, Herodias, actually what she did is she sent the very charismatic daughter of the harlot, because remember in Revelation 17, the woman has daughters. And so this charismatic daughter goes in and really pleases the king with her actions and her dances and her singing and her music and all her very pleasing movements and words and all those various things. Well, she ends up really pleasing the king and his cabinet. And so they're like, what does he say? I'll give you anything you ask for. And he says it again, I'll give you up to half of my kingdom. What is he saying? I will connect church and state together because I like you so much. That's what's happening in Mark chapter 6. And so what goes on is Herod is the civil power, the apostate persecuting religious power is Herodias with her harlot daughter, and then God's faithful is John the Baptist. Now, what happens to this faithful remnant? He actually ends up losing his head, as it says in Revelation chapter 20, verses 4 and onward, right? Those that are there in heaven are those that have lost their head for their faith. They were persecuted unto death. This is not something that is just going to be happening at the end of time. It's been happening all through the history of this world. And you can find that John the Baptist lost his head as a result of the persecuting woman and her daughter. In fact, what did the daughter do? The daughter went back and said to her mother, what should I do? And she said, I want the head of John the Baptist. And so what happened is she gets it in a charger and she brings it to her mother. The mother then brings it to Herod. Herod was absolutely upset about the whole thing. He said, no, this is not right. But he was thinking that in his mind. But of course, the cabinet was so drunk with the wine of Rome that they couldn't even suggest that, you know what, this doesn't sound right. And so the whole thing went on that John the faithful, representing God's people at the end of time, died. Why? Because of the civil authority and the apostate church coming together to persecute God's people. That's what happened. And that's what's going to happen again. And so we see another scenario, okay? Governor Pilate, at the end of Jesus's life, he said, what evil has this man done? And we know that Jesus, of course, represents those that are faithful at the end of time. We can know that that story of Christ's life, especially like the last week, totally illustrates all of what he did, or rather all of what will be happening to us, especially the last closing scenes of his life at the end of time. There are so many connections. If you've never studied that in light of the end of time, please do so. It's amazing, okay? There's a study online that I did called Jesus or Barabbas at the YouTube page, Revelation with Daniel. If you wanted to see that, it's something that will help maybe like open your mind to that idea. Anyways, Herod, Governor Pilate, he had said, what evil has this man done? You can read this story in Matthew 27. And the Jews were there. The Jews were like, we want God's faithful child dead. And God's faithful child was like, you know, I mean, even the governor has said that I haven't done anything wrong. So the governor didn't really know what was going on. Like, do you want Barabbas or do you want Jesus? And they said, we want Barabbas. By the way, Barabbas, Bar Abba. Bar means the son of. Abba means father. Bar Abbas. Bar Abba. Bar or the son of the father. Which one do you want? Do you want the real son of God or do you want somebody named the son of the father? And they're like, we want the Trinity. We want somebody just named the son of God. It's really a metaphorical thing, but that's what we want. And Jesus over there is the real son of God. He's being persecuted unto death. Why? Because Governor Pilate didn't really know what was happening. So he and Herod worked together, and they ended up actually persecuting God's people. What happened, though? The Jews said, we have no king but Caesar. Caesar was like the leader there of Rome, right? I mean, you worshipped Caesar. In fact, you called Caesar Lord and God. And if you didn't offer incense to him or kiss his ring, you could be killed. In other words, if you didn't worship that Lord or God, you could lose your life. Why? Because you would be persecuted for your faith. That's what was happening right there with the Jews. They surrendered to a false god. We have no king but Caesar. They didn't say Pilate or Herod. We have no king but Caesar. This is huge, very big. This is dealing with the seal of God and the mark of the beast issues at the end of time. So the next president of the United States, you need to understand. You, according to the Bible narrative, all these stories illustrating the end of time, it's likely you don't fully understand what's happening. The Bible and the Great Controversy working together are an extraordinarily good books that you should have in your library, okay? That information contained in the Bible and the writings of the Great Controversy are extraordinaire. That's like what any leader of this world should read because it encapsulates what's going on at the end of time. And you don't want to be caught up on the wrong side. You will be judged for your works just like everybody else will be judged for their works. Me for mine, you for yours, they for theirs. Okay, so everybody needs to understand that our decisions in this world have a major result in what's going to be happening to our future life with or without God. Okay, so it's very important to understand the concepts that are there. So if there really were a dedicated Christian for a United States leader, if there really was a dedicated Christian, okay, I'm not a reader of hearts, but I've seen some of the activities that Trump has been through, and it doesn't seem like he's a really dedicated Christian. For one, he's not keeping the seventh-day Sabbath. That's what God has said in the book of Revelation, that those at the end of time that are faithful will be doing. He's not doing it, right? So if there really was a faithful, dedicated Christian for the United States leader, it would follow the biblical narrative to have him on the side of those who are persecuted even unto death. So it doesn't fit the model. We're not going to have a really serious dedicated Christian for a president here in the United States. It doesn't fit the biblical narrative and all the stories leading up to Revelation, that all those stories help us understand the book of Revelation. So it would make better sense that the next United States president of the United States will be ignorant of the real purposes of all those that are parties around him. The religious right, the KKK, the BLM, Antifa, health leaders, big tech, scientists, all those things. Educators, they are not on your side. Okay? If we're not surrendering ourselves to the Bible, if that's not our foundation, we will not be on the right side. So these faithful leaders in the Bible, think about it. The Bible tells the full-length story of Joseph in the book of Genesis, Esther in the book of Esther, and Daniel in the story of Daniel. These three people, which were in high positions in the government, world-ruling governments in some scenarios, they were always second in command with rock-solid faith. Now, think about Joseph for a minute. We could go to Genesis 39 through 45. I'm actually going to take you there right now. And let me just share my screen so that I can take you to Genesis. Where are we again? Genesis 41 and 39. Pharaoh said unto Joseph, for as much as God has showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. So Pharaoh is saying this, right? Pharaoh said that to Joseph, one of God's leaders. God, one of God's children. Thou shalt be over my house. So Joseph is actually in the government of Pharaoh, one of the world ruling leaders. And according unto thy word, shall all my people be ruled. In other words, you're going to be over my house, and my people will be ruled by you. Only in the throne will I be greater than you. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, see, I have set thee over all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh took off his ring from his hand, and he put it upon Joseph's hand, and arrayed him in vestures of fine linen, and put on a golden chain around his neck. And he made him ride in the second chariot which he had. And they cried before him, bow the knee. And he made him ruler over all the land of Egypt. Okay, so Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I am Pharaoh, and without thee shall no man lift up his hand or foot in the land of Egypt. And Joseph called Joseph's name Zaphnath-Paneah, and he gave him to wife, and it goes on and tells the story. But the whole scenario about this is that Joseph was a leader in Egypt. Now, so is there a leader in Egypt? Is there somebody who really followed God? Yes. Is there somebody in America who's really following God? Well, in the notes, somebody might say, well, sure, Ben Carson, right? Benjamin Carson, the doctor, the surgeon, the one that's got that amazing history and that great testimony. I've actually watched it online. It's wonderful. But I saw during his presidential campaigning, there were two separate Sabbaths. I've got them in the notes there. And those notes will be connected to the video that I show here on both Facebook and YouTube. I want to upload this one. And it's going to be in the description of this video that you'll find the notes. Okay, so in the notes, you can see that there are two separate times. I dictated one of them. I mean, I documented one of them for sure, where Dr. Ben Carson was on the Sabbath day during the sacred hours campaigning for his presidential position. Okay. I've watched the video. I know what was happening. It was Saturday. I get it. And he just wasn't doing, he was actually trying to get a job on the Sabbath. Okay. So he broke it. It's not him. He's not the one that's the faithful commandment keeper in the United States, second in command. He wasn't second in command, but he is a leader. And so we're looking for that guy. Where is he? Who is he? I don't know. I have no idea. I'm just saying that's what the biblical narrative is in the story of Joseph. Also, in the story of Daniel, you can see that there are others. Oh, by the way, Joseph, for example, what he did is he spared God's people and all the others that were even not God's. In the story of Joseph, he actually spared everybody from a famine in the land. And so what does the Bible teach? The Bible actually shares this. Behold, the days come, saith the Lord God, that I will send a famine in the land. But it's not a famine of bread, nor a thirst from water. But what is it? It's a hearing of the word of the Lord. And they shall wander from sea to sea and from north even to the east, and they shall run to and fro to seek the word of the Lord, and they shall not find it. That's the most tragic above any kind of famine other than this. This is the most tragic. After the days of Joseph in Egypt, God brought his people out of the bondage of Egypt. Later, Egypt came against God's people with what seemed to be a death decree. So try to understand what I'm saying there. What's happening is Egypt was actually helping God's people, and then later Egypt came with a death decree against God's people. So it's really not a good thing that we help the government and get involved in the government, because the government's going to turn and bite us. So it's like, remember Jesus said, don't cast your pearls unto swine, because they will turn and rend you. It's kind of the same concept. In fact, what you can see it here is in the book of Exodus 14, verse 10, when Pharaoh drew nigh, and the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and what happened? The Egyptians marched against them. They were going toward them with a death decree. And they, the children of Israel, were sore afraid. And the children of Israel cried unto the Lord, and they said unto Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken us away to die in this wilderness? And so what happens in that story is God's people were surrounded with the Egyptians, chased by the Egyptians, and the Egyptians were going to kill them. Death decree, right? Same thing. Joseph is faithful, representing the faithful people of God. There's the harlot woman, and there's, you know, all this scenario going on in the story of Joseph, which is before. Later, of course, is when they come and try to persecute God's people. So God's people were helped by Egypt, and then later there was a death decree against them. And so you can see the same scenario with the story of Esther. Because, like, think about it. In the story of Esther, you can find in Esther 2:17, and I'm just going to share my screen here and we'll read it together, and it goes like this. The king loved Esther above all the women, and she obtained grace and favor in his sight more than all the virgins, so that he set the royal crown upon her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. And so what you have there is the civil authority really liking those that represent God's people. And of course, it's the harlot woman and Joseph. It's the Haman that wants worship over here. It's the group that's civil coming together in Daniel 3. It's the unfaithful coming together of the apostate religious people in Daniel chapter 6. And like we said, in the story of Jesus and the story of John the Baptist as well. And so we have Esther being helped by Persia. She was made queen. She was helped big time. But later Persia brought, because of deception, Persia brought a death decree against the faithful, the people of God, right? So at first they were helped in Egypt, and then there was the death decree. At first they were helped in Persia, and then there was the death decree. And you can see the same thing in the story of Daniel. So Daniel goes on that it happened. I'm actually going to read something for you. Notice what happened before the days of Esther. Cyrus, king of Persia, was used of God to call his people out of Babylon. You can find that. The prophecy was given many years in advance, found in Isaiah 44, verse 28. That same prophecy was fulfilled in the record of Ezra, verses 1 through 3, later in chapter 1. Persia was a tool in the hand of the enemy to bring a death decree against God's people. You can see Esther 3, verses 8 through 15, if you're interested. America was a safe haven for God's people coming out of Roman Catholicism over in Europe, and America will later make an image to Roman Catholicism, which used to help God's people in a sense. You can go all the way back to the disciples, and it was out of you will come those that will be like wolves, and they will lead people after themselves. That's the start of the Babylonian system there in the New Testament. And so what you have is Roman Catholicism will later bring a death decree against God's people. And so Daniel, let's see. In chapter 5, you can see this pretty clearly. And he was given positions, in fact, lots of positions. I'll just read this section for you. I'm going to share my screen again. And you can read in this section here. And the king communed with them, and among them was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore stood they before the king. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding that the king required of them, the king found them, the faithful of God, 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in all his realm. And so he actually set Daniel there next to himself. That's what goes on to show in this story. And so in Daniel chapter 2, what happens? The king made Daniel a great man and gave him many gifts, and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon. So now, this is Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, actually making Daniel a ruler, right? And chief of the governors over the wise men of Babylon. So in chapter 3, what happens? The king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Again, God's faithful people in the province of Babylon. So they were promoted. In Daniel chapter 6, then Daniel was preferred above the presidents and princes, and Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the king of Cyrus, the Persian. So all these world rulers, all these leaders were actually benefiting God's people. And in this case, we saw several in the book of Daniel where God was actually using the king to bless his people. But what happened later? God's people were actually persecuted later by Babylon, by Persia, or Medo-Persia. And so what's going on is that though America has in so many ways helped God's people, they're going to turn like the swine receiving pearls. They're going to turn and rend God's people. We are not going to be benefited in the future by America. The king or the president, the next president, likely the next or the next, whoever knows how long, because I don't know the future, but to the next president, you need to understand these concepts in the Bible. You need to understand the prophecies. You need to know that God is calling you to help his people, not to condemn them ignorantly, okay? So this is what's happening. And it's very important to understand. So Revelation 18 actually talks about, in that section of the gospel going to the world, it describes here in Revelation 18 verses 1 and onward, I saw another angel come down from heaven, and that angel had great power. It was God-given power. And the earth, all of it, was lightened with the glory of this angel, which was given from God's power. Okay, so this is going to be a mighty message that goes around the world. He, the angel, cried with a mighty voice, right? And he cried, what did he cry? Babylon, that woman that's in chapter 17, not 18, but chapter 17, that is called the harlot woman that has daughters. That woman, Babylon the Great, she's going to fall. She's going to fall big time. And behold, the habitation of devils is what she is. She is now the hold or cage of every foul spirit or angel, because angels and spirits are the same concept you can see in Hebrews 1:7. And they are the cage of every unclean and hateful bird, okay? So the nations of Medes and Persians that Daniel prophesied about to destroy Babylon were later the tool to throw Daniel, representing God's people, into the lion's den during the death decree. And so we can see clearly that the Bible is making it so very important for us to understand that those nations that have been a help in the future, in the past, or perhaps in the future, I'm not sure, they will end up being the curse. Why? Because of the harlot woman that wants to mess up Joseph, because of that group that comes together, or that, like Haman, for example, that wants to persecute Mordecai, and Esther was kind of caught in that mix. But so we can see, like, that group of sheriffs and governors and judges and all those coming together to mess with Nebuchadnezzar's mind, right? And so it's the same group that came to Darius, the 122 unfaithful that messed with Darius's mind. And so we have all these stories illustrating what's happening in the Bible prophecy of Revelation. And so I want to read for you real quick Revelation chapter 13. We're going to go to Revelation 13, verse 11. I beheld another nation. You can find this is a nation. You can see it. It's a kingdom in Daniel chapter 7. It came up out of the earth. It didn't come up out of the water. It came up out of a place that is unpopulated, as the water in Revelation 17, verse 15, refers to a lot of people. So this nation comes up out of the unpopulated area. He has two powers, two horns. Powers or horns, represented like in Habakkuk chapter 3, represents the powers coming out of his hand like the horns. It's these two powers that are like a lamb. So Christ is the lamb in the book of Revelation. There's two powers, two forces, two authoritative fronts that are Christian-like, right? So there's a nation that comes up in an unpopulated area, and it has two horn-like principles. I'm going to just suggest that one is republicanism and the other one is Protestantism. Okay, but he speaks like a dragon. Who's the dragon? Revelation chapter 12, verses 7 through 9 talks about Satan being the dragon cast out of heaven, coming to this earth. So this nation comes up out of an unpopulated area, has this Republican and Protestantism as their foundation, like one nation under God, for example, and he spake as the devil. He exercises how much? All the power, all the force or authority of the first beast before him, which is the papacy of the Roman Dark and Middle Ages. And he causes that. He exercises all the power, and he causes. That was worldwide power that was very persecutive. He caused the earth, everybody, and them which dwell therein, all of them, to worship. That's the whole focus. So listen, the next president of the United States, this whole prophecy here is talking about world convergence, worldwide gathering, coming together from all the different parts of the world, not for COVID. That's just the preparation for it, but it's to worship. That's the whole goal. The devil is behind this thing, and he wants everybody to worship. So the worship laws that are dictated or described in Daniel chapter 6, where there are laws void of religious liberty, and it's laws that are drawing people and forcing them to worship, it's going to be Sunday. Sunday is the day that they're going to force people to worship on, and they're going to cause people to desecrate or dismiss the worship of Sabbath, the biblical Sabbath. Why? Because the true God of the Bible, not a Trinity, not a tritheistic God, not a partialistic God, not a modalist God. These are false gods. What we have is a Father, the one true God, according to 1 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 6. It's the Father, and he has a Son. That Father has a day that he is given as a result of creating through his Son for rest. God rested that day as an example for his Son and everybody else, and we need to be able to rest on that day as well. But that's how we show our honor, our submission, our willingness to serve the God of the Bible, is by surrendering our that day that he has requested to him. That's Sabbath, Saturday. It's not Sunday. But the Catholic Church, or let me just say the ecumenical movement, the Roman system, actually brought together the first Sunday law, which is in 321, and it was for the venerable day of the sun, which is S-U-N. They actually were involved in sun worship. And so they gave that day as a law in 321. You can read about it from Constantine. Later, just only 4 years later in 325, they introduced the Trinity into this concept. And why? Because the Trinity is the God of Sunday. The God that they were already worshiping gave everybody Sunday as a law, and then they instituted the worship of the God of Sunday into their law as well. So it became actually part of persecuting God's people that were not surrendering to the day or to the God. And that's where, like, those three tribes were plucked up by the roots in Daniel chapter 7. You can read that for yourself. And so all of this is going on. By the way, they were believers in the Father and his Son, his only begotten Son. And that's why they were Arian. And I don't think Arian believed Jesus Christ was created. That's nonsense. That's what people say, I believe, but I don't believe that even for a minute. I've never taught that in my life. But he is begotten, amen, just like Eve was begotten from Adam. And so what we have here in this story is that all of these illustrative scenario. Oh, the reason why it's Saturday instead of Sunday is because the God of the Bible has given us Sabbath or Saturday, and the God not of the Bible, the Trinity, has given us Sunday. That's the mark of the beast and seal of God issue. It's not really about the day, it's about who you worship. And because of who you worship, you will keep the day. That's where the day fits in. But that's why Sunday is going to be a big deal, and the Sabbath, and it's going to be this great conflict, and God's people will be killed as a result of the harlot woman and her daughters. Why? Because the king will not know. The president will not know. The president will be ignorant of these things. And so I'm begging whatever president it is, whoever it is, to take seriously the Bible and the great controversy. So let me continue on with this idea in the notes. Oh, no, actually, I was sharing the Bible with you. This is Revelation 13. So he, this is the power, America, exercises all the power of the first beast before him, which was Rome and the papacy. And he causes, that's enforcing, causing the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast, which was Rome, and the papacy, or the Catholicism, whose deadly wound was healed. Now, they didn't receive any wound but a civil death, okay? So their civil power or authority was taken from them. You'll have to excuse me, a train is going by right now. So this deadly wound was the civil authority that they received, and that civil authority will be yielded back by this he, which is America, giving all power again to the papacy and the apostate Protestants in North America. And he, with all this power, right, from all the power, like it says here, he does great miracles. This word is wonders, is miracles. He does great wonders so that he, America, and the apostate Protestants there, makes fire come down from heaven on earth in the sight of men. This phrase, sight of men, we're going to see that again. But fire coming down in the Old Testament from heaven actually showed that you believed, or you were being shown by God that he accepted you. Okay, you can find that in many sections of the Old Testament. So what's happening is fire is coming down from God out of heaven. And it's as though this apostate power, America with the apostate Protestants, is receiving the blessings of God. And he deceives them that dwell in the earth. That's the whole purpose of this scenario. He deceives them that dwell in the earth by means of those miracles or wonders, as it says in the previous verse, which he had power to do in the sight of the papacy, saying to them that dwell on the earth, everybody, that includes you, that they should make an image to the papacy, being a civil and religious authority all at one time, which had a wound by a sword. That was the sword, by the way, in Revelation, I'm sorry, Romans 13 actually represents the civil power or civil authority. So they had wound by a sword and they still did live. Why? because they resurrected, as it says in chapter 13 in the first couple of verses. He, that's this image to the beast now, the one that America and the papacy is making together with the apostate Protestants, he had power to give life into the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause. So laws are going to be written and civil authority will be enforcing that as many as would not worship, there's that word again, the image of the beast, they should be persecuted unto death. And he caused all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, anybody, to receive a mark, a signification of what they are or who they are. They will receive a mark in their right hand or in their forehead. So, okay, wait a minute. Everybody, he will cause them to receive a mark that will show who they belong to. If it's a mark of the beast, it will be a mark that shows you belong to me. That's Sunday. But if you receive the mark or seal of God, the mark as it says in Ezekiel chapter 9, or seal of God, it will show you are one of God's people, right? That's the Sabbath day. And that no man might buy or sell, that's where economic crisis comes in against those that are faithful to God. By the way, it will happen. That's where all the digital dollars are coming from, is because the devil is trying to prepare the world to persecute those that are on this world, just like in the story of Joseph, just like Esther, just like the three faithful Hebrews, just like Daniel, just like John the Baptist, just like Jesus. All of those scenarios will be as it was in the Dark Ages again. You won't be able to buy or sell, except if you wear a mask, like in some parts of America, unless you have a vaccine, as will be in America and around the world, or unless you worship on the day that we have dictated, because we're trying to keep the world and the environment. We're trying to keep the environment safe, and so what we're going to do is shut down the entire world for one day every week. And so no man will be able to buy or sell except those that follow along with the dictates of these false religious and civil authorities. And they need either the name of the beast, the mark of the beast, or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him that hath understanding calculate, count, or equate the number of the beast. It is a number, and it is of the beast. You are to compute that. It is the number of a man. Let me suggest it's the number of the man that is ahead of the beast, which is the papacy. It is the Pope. And his number is 666. Do your study on that. Read the book, The Great Controversy, and you will come to a great understanding of what that all represents. So I have spoken a lot, and I have spoken quickly. But I want you to know that I feel very passionate about this. I believe that it is very important for us to know and understand what it is the Bible is saying in this time in Earth's history. There's plenty of other things that I could read and show, but I'm going to share with you real quick about this quote here from the a book. It's Bible commentary. This is saying the Lord, this is a quote from the devil, the Lord has clearly defined the road to the city of God, but the great apostate has changed the signpost, setting up a false one, a false signpost, a spurious Sabbath. He says, I will work at cross purposes with God. I will empower my delegate, the man of sin, which is the papacy, to take down God's memorial, which is the seventh-day Sabbath. Thus will I show the world that the day sanctified and blessed by God has been changed from Saturday to Sunday, which it never has and it never will be. That day shall not live in the minds of the people. He's going to try to erase the past, kind of like Ingsoc, if you know what I mean, from 1984. The mutability of history, something going on even now. I will obliterate the memory of it. I will place in its stead a day bearing not the credentials of heaven, a day that cannot be a sign between God and his people, which is Sunday. It cannot be a sign between God and his people. He didn't give us that day to show that that is his sign. I will, by the way, in Exodus, Ezekiel 20, verses 12 and 20, you can read that the seventh-day Sabbath is a sign between God and his people. I will lead the people who accept this day, which is the devil still speaking, to place upon it the sanctity that God placed upon the seventh day. Through my vicegerent, which is the papal leader, I will exalt myself. The first day shall be extolled or uplifted. And the Protestant world, again, the apostate Protestants of Revelation 13, verses 11 through 18, which are the image of the beast, they shall receive this spurious Sabbath as though it is genuine. Through the non-observance of the Sabbath God instituted, I will bring his law into contempt. That's his whole goal. Satan's goal is to bring God's law into contempt. The words, a sign between me and you throughout your generations, as it says in the Bible, I will make to serve on the side of my Sabbath, which is the false Sabbath, Sunday. Thus the world will become mine. I will be ruler of the earth, prince of the world. I will so control the minds under my power that God's Sabbath shall be an object of contempt. A sign? I will make the observance of the Sabbath day a sign of disloyalty to the authorities of earth. Human laws shall be made so stringent that men and women will not dare to observe the seventh-day Sabbath. Why? For fear of and want of clothing and food, they will join with the world in transgressing the Sabbath, God's law, and the earth will be wholly under my dominion. The fourth Bible commentary written by Ellen White in page 1171. I've got more on my notes, but as I said, they will be available in the description and the link below. Please understand, this is extremely important. We need to know, we need to understand what it is that the Bible is saying in the book of Revelation, using the rest of the Bible to illustrate what it means. And we need to know from all these scenarios that it is deception that is causing God's people to end up finally under persecution. Why? Because the devil wants worship. The devil wants worship. It's bigger than COVID. It's bigger than vaccines. It's bigger than this idea of power on a human scale. This is the devil trying to usurp the kingdom of God. God is real, the devil is real, and that's what it boils down to. So we must not worship the beast and his image. We must worship the Father in his image, which is the Son, Jesus Christ. So the beast and the Father are at war, and the Son and the image are at war. We have this controversy between Christ and his angels and Satan and his angels, and we can see it all through history. Please, by God's grace, examine yourself. Repent of your sins, confess your sins, accept Christ as your personal Savior, read in his holy word that which God would have you to know and understand, and we must be completely surrendered to his will. It is my desire to ask that we would bow our knees, we would pray, asking God's blessings on our situation in our lives under all these circumstances, whether you're in the Philippines, like some of you, like we're in America, like I am, or whether you're rulers, or whether you're leaders, whoever you are, let's commit ourselves to God. I'm going to bow my knees and ask God's blessings, and I pray that he will be merciful to us all. Father in heaven, I ask that you would please lead and guide us, that we can be blessed, we can be kept, we can be totally surrendered to your will. We thank you for this opportunity, praying that you would guide us, keep us, lead us, and benefit us through your word. And as we've heard this story, this study, help us to be blessed and fully committed to you, knowing that you know and understand all things that are coming, all things that are, all things that have been. And you are the God of wisdom we need to surrender to. So please have mercy on us. Lead the president, lead the next president, and if potential, the next president beyond, whoever it is that leads in America, help them to know and understand what's really happening behind the scenes. We thank you for this, asking for mercy for all of us. In Jesus' holy name, amen.